Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. here on WAFS, otherwise known as Biz 1190. Here we celebrate the entrepreneurial spirit. We relish in our successes, and we learn from our mistakes, and we're glad that you're with us. Belhaven College is a college with campuses in several cities, and Belhaven is a Christian university, and Belhaven teaches their programs from a Christian worldview. In fact, from their website, it says that these programs are taught from a Christian worldview perspective and are guided by the mission to prepare students academically and spiritually to serve Christ Jesus in their careers. Very interesting school, and we have a very interesting guest today. Our guest today is Kim Chavez. Ms. Chavez is the Dean of Faculty at the Atlanta, the Chattanooga, and the Dalton campuses. We're very glad she's here. Kim, welcome to Driven to Business.
Thank you, Eddie. I appreciate it.
Kim, you've had a very successful career, and actually a pretty varied career, and not just in education.
Yes.
And among your other accomplishments, one of the things that sort of interested me was that you're an Army officer, or you're an ex-Army officer. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, well, you're never really an ex-officer.
You're right.
But yes, I was very blessed to have the opportunity to spend about 12 years in the U.S. Army as a captain.
I was also in the military.
Ah.
But some people would say only barely. I was an enlisted guy in the Coast Guard.
Okay.
Number of years ago. But, you know, in spite of all that, I learned a lot from the Coast Guard. In fact, I went into the Coast Guard before going to college, and I did pretty well in college. And I have told a lot of people, I think except for the discipline that was sort of imposed on me, actually, in the Coast Guard, I would have not have done very well in college because I did not have a stellar high school career academically at all. Didn't study, didn't do homework. And you'll probably appreciate this. I got into the Coast Guard, and after getting out of boot camp, they sent me to New York City to an electronic school up there.
Wow.
And they sent us home like the second night with a lot of homework up there. And as was my usual experience, I didn't do it. So I came back. Well, when I didn't turn in the next day, the guy made me do like 300 push-ups.
That's it? 300?
I
guess it was the Coast Guard.
Yeah, thank you. But, you know, somewhere in the recesses of my brain, a switch closed back there. I don't know. No one had ever done that to me before. A switch closed back there. And I didn't miss any more homework. And, in fact, I ended up graduating number two in that class. I was number one for a while, and another guy, and I kept fighting over the position in it. And I've never had any issues academically since then. I think for a young man, and a young person, I should say, yeah, going into the military can actually be a wonderful experience to sort of mature you a bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it can really help you to discipline you, also to help you to find really what makes you, what drives you, what inspires you, what you would do if you did not have to work. And that's really what I found in my experience and my experience with a lot of people under my command, is to help them to find what really makes, what drives them, what just really, when you get up in the morning, you're just so excited you can barely contain yourself. And that's what the Army taught me. It taught me that developing people and giving them the tools to succeed, that's what made me tick. And it like you, when your switch clicked, that clicked for me as a young woman in the military. I started off as an enlisted woman and competed for a scholarship for college. My mom unfortunately had cancer and passed away, so there was no way for me to finish paying for my education because I was out of state. It was very expensive. It was a top 10 business school, Indiana University. And I couldn't pay for it. And the Army contacted me, sought me out, and I competed and got excited, became an enlisted woman, competed to become an officer, and won one of, out of 250 people, won the one slot that they had available for a full ride scholarship. So it was a very intense time, to say the least.
That's amazing that you did that. Now, you were, if I'm reading your bio correctly here, you were an artillery officer. At least you were at one time.
Yes, I ended up my career as an artillery officer. I started off as an enlisted woman in finance. Which
you realize, because we didn't have a lot of artillery in the Coast Guard. You're aware of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I loved it. When I started off my enlisted career, I was they put me as a finance person because I was a business major, and that was not fun. They called us chairborne, and I didn't like it. I didn't want to be chairborne. I wanted to be airborne, which later I did become airborne, but I didn't like the it was great for the time period, but I really wanted to see the action. And then when I became an officer, they allowed me to go into the only combat arms at that time that in which women were allowed to enter, and I was very excited by that.
So chairborne, I wrote that word down. That's a new word. I can use that instead of bean counter now as a term of derision for
chairborne. Yeah, that's all the garrison people, all the people that don't. I mean, everyone sees action, of course. If you have an opportunity to serve overseas, everyone's within harm's way. So it's just a joke between people that are not airborne qualified, and then of course you have the term that's called legs, which are people that only go to airborne school and only have 5 jumps. They don't really see anything past there. But to me, that's just as good as anything else.
Right. My bean counter friends, I kid them all the time and say that you're the kind of guys that take the fun out of funding. There's nothing.
Yes. Exactly.
Just sit around and count beans.
Yeah.
Kim, we have a good family friend who's actually serving as a naval fighter pilot right now.
Wow.
And when he was in Annapolis, he's the same age as my son, and we used to talk back and forth by email. He shared a quote with me from his days at Annapolis, and I wrote it down. I've sort of thought about it many times, okay. And I realize this is you were Army and he's Navy, but I think the change of words and the same thing applies. He said that one of the things the sort of mantras there at Annapolis was that sailors will obey orders, but they will only follow leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I find that an intriguing statement, and not just as it applies to the military. So
yeah.
as an Army officer, do you agree and relate to that statement at all?
Absolutely. I had a wonderful commander that took me under his wing, and I wasn't very well educated. I came from an inner city school. I was raised in the projects. I'm not sure if you'd heard my testimony or not, but I had a pretty rough upbringing. So I was not sophisticated or seasoned in any way, shape, or form. And he said, you have a lot of potential, but you really are rough. And he said, you can lead, and people will lead because they're afraid of you. He said, but that's not a way to lead. And if you're out there and no one's following you, all you're doing is taking a walk. Mm-hmm. And I remembered that, and I said, wow, that is true. I didn't really understand it because I was young. I was only 19 at the time. But it stuck with me. And I said, that's true, because if you inspire through fear or because of your positional authority, that's no way to lead. But if you lead because people are interested and they get behind your vision and they're excited that you're on their team and you're not afraid to work with them and be on the team and not the leader or the commander, then it's so different. And I did several deployments overseas and into combat zones, and I was able to bring all my soldiers back home healthy, full, all their body parts, their mind intact. And really it was because of their technical expertise, but it was also because I wasn't afraid to lead and be with them and get into their lives and to hopefully inspire them and not to say I'm the commander. And I don't do that here either. People, the other day I had to fix the toilet and people were laughing. Somebody said, who is that? And they go, it's the dean. And they go, what? Because I'm in there with my suit and a plunger fixing the toilet because there's no plumber available in the evening that we could find. So I said, well, give me a plunger and a pair of gloves and some paper towels. We'll take care of this. And so it's, that's pretty much the way I lead.
I think that's remarkable. I'm sure you've probably read some of John Maxwell's stuff. And, Maxwell talks about the difference between positional leadership, which he doesn't disdain. I mean, in the military and really in anything, you do need some description of positions. Like you're the dean of faculty there. There's not another one. I mean, that
right.
There's sort of some things that come along with that. So this isn't
sure.
Disdaining of the position. Real leadership goes way beyond that, doesn't it? I mean, that's what you're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. It has to. And you have to. I had the wonderful opportunity to work with, I was an aide de camp, which seems not that great, but people in the military know that that is a esteemed position to a general. You're basically their aide.
Right.
And you are everywhere with this person. And I was the aide de camp to a second star Briggs is his name, and then he also worked with the Three Corps commander, Tommy Franks. And although I was not his aide, we had an opportunity to work around him. And this man was an amazing leader. Both of them were. And I watched, as a young lieutenant, I watched how they led and how they were in the field with the soldiers. Of course, I was there with them, so I saw everything. And just how they communicated. And, of course, the position was there and you know, all the different protocol things that would go along with it. But still, they were so real, and they would remember people's names and their babies that were born, people that had diseases, deaths that happened. It was just amazing to watch these gentlemen in action, and that's always stuck with me throughout my time as well, just to really care and to not to pretend like you care, like, oh, okay, I talked to five people, let me mark it off my list and go do some other stuff. They really cared, and it didn't matter how long it took for them to get what they needed to do done. They just went out and did it, and it was just amazing to watch these guys. And they were so technically astute, as well as just interpersonally and emotionally. Their emotional intelligence was amazing. They really inspired me to become more.
I think what you described there, I just looking at that statement I'd written down and asked you about, you've really just perfectly described, I think, or at least put into a real life situation, that statement about that sailors obey, or our soldiers, I guess you could substitute there, mm-hmm. that people will obey orders, but they follow leaders. But, you know, even in business, we have that, don't we? You know, I can be the boss, and people do what I tell them because I'm responsible for their paycheck. But, but you know, in business, if that's all you've got, is you're holding their paycheck over their head. Well, number one, that's not much fun to be in a position like that. And that company's going nowhere if that's the way it works.
Right. And they're going to leave if you don't grow them, they're going to go. We always have a saying in development and training and HR, if you don't grow them, they're going to go. And when you recruit top talent and you don't retain them, then you cannot compete, particularly in today's environment. There's no way, because that talented person has so many different options. Even in a depressed economy, it doesn't matter. The top talent never are hungry. They are not. They're going to find work. It's not an issue. And so if you don't inspire them in different ways besides you're just the person in charge, then they're going to leave. They're going to find an opportunity to go somewhere else.
I heard I heard a speech by Jack Welch recently, mm-hmm. and a guy I really admire. And Jack said that that a leader should never be afraid to be the dumbest person in the room. In other words, you should have no fear of hiring people that are smarter than you, because that's the only way really that things move forward, and you've got to be self-assured enough to be able to take that. Kim, if you can hang around during the break, I've got a lot more to talk to you about. You're a great guest. You are listening to Driven to Business. We are streamed live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and I encourage you to go there and look at it. We'll be back with Kim Chavez, more of Driven to Business, in just a few moments. Hang around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with the Dean of Faculty for Belhaven University, Kim Chavez, a very interesting guest. And if you're just tuning in, Kim has a military background as well as a personal training background, as well as a business background, and is now in education. And she's an accomplished and very well-spoken person. And Kim, we're glad you're here, as I said before.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Kim, I read a book about military leadership some time ago, having not been a military leader myself very much, but I was an E5, so you know what that is. But I think in the Army, you call that an NCO. In the Coast Guard, we call it petty officer.
Yeah,
you know, the idea that we're petty officers, but we thought we had officers that were petty. We used to joke about that. But I'm just kidding. I had great officers in the Coast Guard. There's a gentleman I actually attended a little seminar he taught some years ago, a Marine colonel named Patrick Townsend. He wrote a book called Five Star Leadership along with another lady. And it's a fascinating book, and there's a great anecdote in there that kind of stuck with me, and I'm sure I'll misquote it here a little bit. But he was talking about a student at the British Military Academy. He was a cadet there. He was in a class where they were giving them the wherewithal to how to lead a company and, you know, how to inspire men in the company and so forth and so on. And the guy asked a question. He said, you know, sir, what do you do if you're just assigned a lousy company? And the guy said, well, sir, so I need to tell you, he said, if you have a lousy company, it just means you're a lousy officer. It doesn't mean anything else. You know, the underlying theme is that leaders have to take responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't only apply in the military, does it?
No, definitely not. It applies in all facets. I'm looking in the, we have a thing called the I Love Me Wall, and you may have been familiar with that from your military experience, but it's a lot of the plaques and things and awards, the I Love Me Wall. I have particular ones on my wall, and I'm looking at them right now, and your quote made me laugh because my very first command as a female officer in a combat arms unit, they were not happy to see me, to say the least. And I'm a redhead, and, I used to be more slight, but I'm still sort of slight. And so I don't look very imposing. I don't look scary at all. I'm not a brooding person. I love to laugh, and I like to smile, so that is not very intimidating either. And so when I showed up, the first command they gave me was a group of men that were maintenance warrant officers and people that had been in the military longer than I had been alive.
Right.
These gentlemen were in Vietnam, and they were unhappy to see me. And it was the most awful thing, and I believe that they wanted to see if I could succeed. And it was very difficult at first. It was so challenging. And I'm looking at the plaque that they gave me that they made in their wood shop, because they were maintenance guys, and it said, to the best officer, to which it's grammatically incorrect, but it says, to the best leader that we've ever had, that we have ever served with. And they put, each one of them put a particular plaque or a thing that reminded them of our duties, because I took them over to Kuwait. And it was amazing to go from, they had some pet names, which obviously we can't say on radio, but for me that were awful. And by the time we left to our hail and farewell, they were crying and giving me hugs. They were so sad that I was leaving. And that just spoke volumes to me, because it was true. The colonel told me the same thing. You were assigned this because they don't think that you can do it, but I know that you can make it happen. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And it was hard. I learned a lot. And you said, when you opened up your show, you said, well, you learn from your failures. And boy, did I learn from a lot of my failures. But wow, did I learn a lot about leading people, personalities, motivation, emotional intelligence, all the things that I love and I research now. That's where it all started. That was my lab, so to speak. But man, it was hard. I don't think I would want to do it again, but I love the result. But the same thing, too, in business. You know, we have, and I don't know if you, did you want to ask a follow-up question?
No, go right ahead.
Okay. When I got out of the military,
story, by the way. That really is.
The plaque is, it means so much to me. If I lost that, that would be very upsetting, but I love that plaque. And, but when I left the military, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do when I grew up. And, but then I had children, so I had to grow up pretty fast, pretty quickly. And so I started my own consulting company where I did performance improvement, and I used a lot of the same things that I learned in the military. And people would call me because I took the tough cases, like, you know, these people are about to start a union, or these people are about to, you know, have some kind of problem, or the EEO is calling me. What do I do? You know, what do I do? These people are so unhappy. Our morale survey is awful. And I'd say, well, let me talk to people. And I would just sit and talk to people. And almost always the root of all the problems, it was a leadership issue. It wasn't they didn't have enough resources. It wasn't they didn't have enough time, or the product was junky, or the service was awful. It was the leader. It was the leadership and why people would leave. Their attrition rate was high. And so when I started talking to the leaders, the ones that were smart would take a personal inventory and take responsibility, just like you said. And, you know, I had one time where I had a soldier that unfortunately got a DUI, and I had to stand before a full-bird colonel and answer why. And, of course, maybe in a smart butt in young 20s said, well, because he was drunk. He said, that's the wrong answer. And the sergeant major looked at me and kind of like said, you know, kind of gave me a grin. And I said, because I'm a bad leader. And he goes, exactly, fix it. Okay. So yeah, it absolutely true. Absolutely.
You know, in a almost convoluted way, when you as a leader learn to accept responsibility for whatever's going on, it's actually empowering in a way too, because, you know, I've always thought about it. If I'm the problem, then I'm the solution.
That's right.
And if someone else that I have no control over is the problem, well, then I can't do anything about that. And that's actually a frustrating position for anybody in leadership. everything rises and falls on leadership. And I absolutely believe that. The problems you were talking about in those companies, it always boils down to the leader. We'll go in some restaurant and get very poor customer service, and someone I'm with will say, they just have terrible waitresses in here. I said, that's not the problem. The problem is the guy running this place. That's the problem. It's not the waitresses. He hires from the same pool everyone else hires from. It's the leadership inside the place that does that. Hey, just not to belabor the military. Something when you were telling me about your plaque, I was reminded of something else that I had read in that 5-star leadership book. He was interviewing a retiring actually Marine Master Sergeant. And he was asking the guy, and the guy had been in combat, done all kinds of things, and he asked the guy, he's a very crusty guy, what's the secret that you think of leading people, you know, leading them in combat, especially the way you have? And he said that the answer surprised him. The guy said, you have to love them.
Yep.
You don't expect to hear that from a Marine Sergeant, do you? Marine Master Sergeant. That's not what you expect to hear.
Well, I do if they've been to combat, because you do have to love them, because that's the only way you make it out. It really is. It's awful. It's very hard. You know, when you're dealing with people's lives and their lives or livelihood, I mean, lives in the military, in the business world, their livelihood, that's no small matter. And to always have that in the back of your mind that if you don't care for these people more than you care for yourself, then you really can't lead. You really can't, because if one of your soldiers or one of your people, you know, is either fired or laid off or whatever, or your product doesn't work, then you're the one that has that responsibility to that family. And in the military, if something happens to somebody, you go as the leader and talk to the family, and you report back to the family as to what the circumstances of the death were. And that's a very heavy place to be. And the same thing, you know, not as much in the civilian world, but still, you know, that lays heavy on your heart when, like in performance improvement or where I came from when I was in the Volkswagen Academy, if you don't train somebody properly and they hurt themselves on the job, they can lose their lives, they can lose their limbs, they can lose their ability to work. I mean, that's a really heavy responsibility in my mind. I always take it very, very, very seriously.
I think you're absolutely right about that. One thing I think that is interesting, which is why I think the military is a good place to study leadership, is that in business, although I make mistakes and they have consequences, rarely does anyone die. Now, the safety issue you just mentioned is something, you may not know this, but I run a company where we do work on large horsepower electronic motor drives. So we're around large, high voltage, high power circuits and large moving equipment. So we can get into that too. Kim, more to come in just a moment. We have a break. You are listening to Driven to Business. My name is Eddie Mayfield. More to come. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. Keep in mind, we are streaming live on biz1190.com, podcasting on eddiemayfield.com. We're glad you're here. We're talking with Kim Chavez, the Dean of Faculty at several campuses for Belhaven University. And we've had a great time talking about leadership and her military career and where she came from. And Kim, I want to talk to you. You've also worked as a performance coach. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, my desire for performance improvement, like we had mentioned before, it started young. I was always curious, what drives people? What causes the successful people to be successful and the not to not be successful? What's going on? And so I started studying training and development, but I quickly took a little bit of a detour into performance improvement, which is more the metrics and the study behind what makes people successful and what drives them. So it is a part of training and development. But I learned in the military kind of by happenstance that I enjoy training. As you can probably tell, I have a good time. We like to talk. And so I was in the hallway one time, and the trainer didn't show up for a class. And so somebody saw me and said, hey, you like to talk in front of people, right? And I said, sure. I said, hey, teach a class on sexual harassment. I was like, what? And they just threw me in the class, and there were 200 Marines staring at me. And so I had to do an impromptu talk on sexual harassment. And they said that was the most fun that they had had because it was serious. It was serious, you know. But I used the material and had a good time because I met them where they were. Because to have someone to tell them all the do's and don'ts and all that, that would be boring. But to talk about what really was going on and why it was important. And so then I quickly, people started learning that I knew how to do training. I enjoyed it. I didn't know all the technical pieces. And so they sent me to the military training school to learn how to be an instructor and get certified and all that. And so after my time in service, after several deployments overseas and just kind of a change in family structure because I had a little infant at this time and they wanted me to go back on my third deployment overseas, I just said, I think I'm done. But I didn't know what to do. And one of my friends said, why don't you just start a performance improvement company? I said, okay, why not? And so I did. And the first person to contact me was actually the Dale Carnegie Corporation. And so I was certified to do all their classes, and I sold some of their products. But then I also had my own business, and I just loved it. I loved seeing people figure out what they wanted to do. And my questions are, where are you now? Where do you want to be? And let's look at the delta or the difference. And that's where I come in, is the delta. That's my job, is to help you get where you want to be, or to help you develop a plan to get there. And so I started doing that for companies all over Miami, where we lived at the time. And then my husband was transferred to Chattanooga, Tennessee. That's how we ended up here for Covenant College. And so I started doing training all around the Chattanooga area. Became pretty well known. I did all the contract work for the city of Chattanooga, the Hamilton County, and several other large companies. And then Chattanooga State contacted me and said, do you want to do some work with us? So I trained all 700 of their staff and faculty, which at the time, looking back now, I realize why, I was brought through that. Because faculty, they are a different animal. Anyway, they were the hardest trainees. They were worse than engineers or maintenance guys by any stretch of the imagination, but in a good way, in a challenging way, because they're very intelligent, obviously. And so I did a customer service piece for Chattanooga State to help them to get to where they were, not knowing at the time that Volkswagen was going to come in their backyard, but to help them get to the level where they needed to be. And it was so much fun. I just enjoyed that. And then I got to the point where I was too busy with my private clients and also Chattanooga State. So Chattanooga State became my only client for about 3 years until I went to Volkswagen.
Now tell us, the Volkswagen is a pretty big deal. Tell us about that, because that was a major deal.
Yes. I was asked I don't have permission to use his name, so I won't. But a gentleman that handles the training for Volkswagen United States, he asked me to partner with their group to write training. And so initially, we sat downtown in the Republic Tower. It was just a couple of people from Germany, high-ranking folks, and the HR people and the buyers. And the buyers were just buying things for the plant. And so it was just maybe 50 or 60 people. And my job was to interview the subject matter experts that they would either take me there or they would fly here to find out what needed to be done for the maintenance people. So you see how this comes full circle? I started my career with maintenance people. Now I'm interviewing subject matter experts in maintenance. So it was really funny because I spoke their language. That's why I got along so well. And my team of 15, we wrote all the technical training for the skilled maintenance team for launching the plant, because they had to be trained first in order to launch the plant. Wow. And then after that, I was asked to do all the orientation. So the very first place where all the people came for orientation was to me or my team, and we led them through a 40-hour session on the history of Volkswagen. We went to the test track and drove all types of brands for Volkswagen, and just helped them to understand what the culture was. And I got to partner with every part of the company in order to present a very positive picture for people coming in and get them excited about partnering with their career with Volkswagen and ending their career for many people here. And it was just it's such a blessing. It was over, I guess now it's probably about maybe 3,700 people. The amount of training that we did, it ended up being, I don't even know the amount of hours, but it was amazing. It was 84 hours of training for the team leaders, 40 hours of training for leadership, 18 weeks for the skilled maintenance team. So it was a lot of training hours, a lot of writing.
You know, that's an amazing thing. You went from being essentially a personal trainer, I mean, sort of, you know, where you were doing...
Not in the gym.
Well, I know what I mean. You know what I mean. Yeah, not physical, but sort of a one-on-one, where are you now, where you want to be kind of guy,
right,
to training thousands of people. I'm sitting here sort of amazed. That's a big jump.
Yes, it is. But it really was just the foundation that I had was great. I had a great education. I had wonderful opportunities, great mentors. And I, like you said in the beginning, I made a lot of mistakes, so I was able to speak from, here's what not to do, because I did this, here's what happens, you know, avoid this, don't do this, and just also having access to the top material, top leadership material, top development technical material, that really made a difference. And I had a great team. I mean, it wasn't just me, certainly. Even at Chattanooga State, when I had the 700 people I trained, I had a team of people that helped me. I was just kind of directed things. So it really is all about inspiring people to be in the right spot, doing the right thing, and just, yeah.
Kim, after starting our company, and even before, I happened to have some good mentors out in Texas when I was working for some guys out there about improving yourself and always looking for people to help coach you along and attending seminars. And I've attended several of the Dale Carnegie courses. I used to go back when he was doing it. I used to go to Zig Ziglar conferences that he would hold and some small conferences. And I used to always enjoy that. I used to tell people that because sometimes I'd get a bit of criticism about that. I said, well, you know, you already knew all that, because I was saying what they'd said. And he said, well, you know, you already knew that. I said, well, you know, having a good coach or attending a good training session may be sort of like hearing a sermon in church. It's not that you necessarily hear anything new every time, but you're reminded of things you probably are not doing, whether you know them or not. You know, there's a big difference in knowing something and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of us know we should eat less and exercise more. I mean, we all know that.
Yes.
And, you know, I kid my doctor that I have the same diagnosis every time. You need to lose weight and exercise more. Okay, I got it. You know, I can pay myself.
Right? You can save some money.
Yeah, right. But, you know, if you stop and think about it a moment, even in, you know, baseball teams go to spring training every year, and these guys have been playing baseball since they were little bitty kids. They know how to handle a grounder. They know that. But they're down there doing it. And I think a lot of us need to remind – we just need to be reminded over and over again, because as human beings, somehow we don't seem to remind ourselves very often, do we?
No, and I have a coach myself I have an executive coach that I hire on my own, and they watch when I train, and I try to lead from the front. So I have classes every week. I have a class that I teach once a week, so I don't sit up in my little, so to speak, ivory tower and tell faculty that what they're doing incorrectly. I'm there too, and I'm on the ground, and I see what's happening. I see how the students are responding, and my coach comes and watches and just tears me apart. And it's hard. It's hard to hear, because it's like, oh, they thought I was great. Now here's what, you know. And oh man, but the three questions that I tell everybody, even students when they do presentations, because I say, this is the safe place. Practice here before you are asked by the CEO or the COO or your vice president to present something. Here's your chance to try some things. But the questions are, what went well? What didn't go well? And what am I going to do differently? Even if it was awesome, you should always ask that. And all the top anybody's athletes, executives, you know, entrepreneurs, whomever, that's what you always ask. And to be consistent, that's the key. It's not so much the brightest. We have a saying in performance improvement is that, you know, performance is a function of ability times motivation and also consistency. So you're going to perform to the level of your ability. That certainly is a factor, but also your motivation to do it by yourself. But also the consistency. Do you show up and do what you need to do? I know what I'm supposed to do, but if I'm not there, it can't get done, right? And so that's
you
so
know, Joel, our producer Joey and I were talking before the program. We both play guitar a little bit, and we were talking about that, and he was asking me how some things are going. I'm taking some lessons to try and get a little better, and he was asking me how that was going. I said, well, you know, kind of along what you're saying, I will think that I'm a pretty decent guitar player until I get around someone that actually is.
Yes, right.
And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, shoot, I don't know anything. You know, and although that is a bit of a kick in the face, it actually makes you work harder to get better at it.
Absolutely.
Even if it's something which is just a hobby for me of playing guitar. Just overall, in about 30 seconds, overall as a trainer, what do you think of American business leadership in general? Do you have any thoughts about that? Are we getting better, getting worse?
We're staying okay. It can get better. It definitely can. I think that with the, especially in Chattanooga, with the influx of the international leadership, it has changed the face in Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley. But I think overall, it's poor, because I think for a while when the economy was poor, then people didn't have a choice, but now they do. People have choices, and companies can't figure out why people, the top talent, why they're leaving. Well, they're leaving because of the leadership. That's why.
I agree. And you know, we have in our company the ability, and I'm not going to name any names here, obviously, mm-hmm. but we see some very large, very successful companies, and we just see mistakes that we sort of say these are cancers in the background is eventually going to eat that company if somebody doesn't get in there and stop that. Kim, we got one more session here. If you can hang around, you're a great guest. I appreciate you being here. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We are here every Saturday morning on WAFS Biz 1190, streaming live on 1190.com. And we'll be back in just a moment. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We're talking with Kim Chavez, a very interesting person to talk with in a lot of areas. And Kim, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. Hey, a good friend of mine named Peter Burke wrote a book entitled A Better Way to Make a Living in a Life. It's a great book. And his book, in a way, and he may not like me saying this, but his book, in a way, reminds me of a bestseller that a guy named Bob Buford wrote called Halftime. And both of these books make the point that we often spend a large portion of our lives chasing something that in the end fails to satisfy us at all. And Buford particularly says, and he's writing to men mostly, because he says specifically, men spend the first half of their lives trying to be successful and the second half of their lives trying to be significant. Do you identify with that statement?
I definitely do, and I spent I had children a little bit later in life comparatively in my 30s. I had a little bit of a half life before where I was able to chase success and go around the world and do a bunch of very interesting things. And the second half of my life, I was able to design, and that has been so rewarding for me. And I hear so many people that don't have that same opportunity, but I've designed it that way on purpose, or as I was blessed to be able to do that. And it meant so much to me, because when I started my business, I was able to be with my children, and my boys, whenever I had to travel, would come with me, and they went everywhere. And now they're teenagers, they're 14 and 12, and they're just the easiest going kids. They're well versed, they read well, they can speak to adults. They went everywhere with me to train, and I think it made a huge impact on them. And they also saw how to interact with people from all different countries, all different backgrounds, educational backgrounds. We work with people coming out of prison all the way to PhDs. They can carry on a conversation with anyone in between. And to me, I totally agree with what you're saying. I'm spending the time, hopefully, being significant and done chasing something that doesn't necessarily matter.
I think, you know, we're sort of designed by God to work and to be successful in a way. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's a matter. No. I think it is a matter of balance. Is the point that there's a great story. Peter Burke, in front of his book, writes a story about this gentleman down at a Mexican coastal village on the Pacific coast. It was that got up every morning and went out and caught fish, brought it back to the market, sold it, and then sat there with his friends, his as good buddies, and they played checkers and would drink a little bit of wine in the afternoons. Mm-hmm. And this American businessman came down there and said, you can improve this. He said, you're a fantastic fisherman. He said, what we'll do is if you can teach other people to fish, we can hire other people. You can teach them to fish like you can fish. And before long, we'll have a fleet of boats. And he said, and then I'll open up an American market. So these are incredible fish you catch. And just in a few years, you'll be fabulously wealthy, and you can just sit around and play checkers, drink wine with your friends. So you kind of come back full circle back to what are you chasing exactly? Exactly what is that you're chasing? And yeah. I know in my life, I would set like financial goals. I say, I want to make this much money. It's even when I work for other people, I want to make this much money. And I would get there, and I was always a little shocked at how. Okay, I'm here and I'm glad, but this is not exactly what I thought. I'm not feeling what I thought I was going to feel when I got here. Have you experienced that?
Oh, definitely. For me, when I attained the rank of captain, that in my especially my family, that was a very big deal. I was the first one to earn a degree, first one to earn a master's degree, first one to start pursuing a PhD. That to me was like as I was pursuing my PhD, the Lord just kept stopping me. I was not able to finish, and it was so frustrating, and I became so angry for a while. Like, why can't I finish this? Well, now I know why. It wasn't the right time. But at the time, that's the only thing I became almost obsessed with it, and it was sad because I missed out on so much that was happening, even things in my business and with my children. And when I learned to relax and let go of that, everything else that I really wanted came to be, although at the time I might not have fully understood that because we don't, we're human. But at the end, when you look back kind of at the things that have happened to you, it's amazing to see exactly the route that you've gone. If you've cooperated with where you're supposed to be, it's amazing to see how much you gain, and maybe financially, maybe not. I've definitely never been hurting for money or any of those things, but yes, I could have made more, and I've had opportunities to make a lot of money, but I've made choices that kept me with my children, and not begrudging anyone that hasn't had an opportunity to make that decision. But for me, when I put all these offers on the table and looked at them in light of what I thought in my mind, what my priorities were my kids while they're at home, because right. they're only home for just a little bit, and my husband, then these other opportunities. Well,
hopefully he's not around for just a little bit. I hope he's going to be around.
Yeah, no, I know. He's still around. we'll keep him. He's good at performance improvement, so he's okay.
Gotcha.
Listen to the trainer. No, he's a great guy. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here. But I was able to make good decisions. And yeah, it may not financially be as rewarding, but for everything else and the flexibility I have in this position I'm in now is amazing. I just love it. I get to do a lot of fun things. I'm in Atlanta, Chattanooga here. I get to develop, close to 400 students. I get to work with 50 faculty that are top notch, in their field. I mean, where else can you do that? That's just, and I have fun. We just ate cake at lunch right before I got a phone call. I had to run back here with cake in my mouth. I mean, where else can you do that?
I know not everyone that listens to us is a person of faith, but a lot probably are. I'm able to see God's hand in my life a lot better when I look back, as we used to say in the Coast Guard, looking at the wake behind you and seeing how straight that wake is, or when you made slight adjustments in that wake. And it appears to me, I sometimes in the grind of the day don't always catch it. As time passes, I look back at whether it's family or career or other things, and you can just sort of see God's hand nudging you here and nudging you there. And it's that's actually a very interesting thing to do, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. I can look at it. I wasn't really exactly sure where our talk would go, so I printed out my resume just so I could have it in front of me. And as I'm looking at it, in light of your question, it's really very interesting to look at what I've done and where I've gone. And it's just amazing the opportunities that I've been given, and just the amount of responsibility he's allowed me to have. So I say, do you really know who I am? And of course he does, of course the Lord knows, but he entrusts me with so much and allows me to just develop other people. It's just, to me, I just get so excited. I was so excited about coming in today, and it's just been, a fabulous day so far.
Just speaking as a dad with grown kids and now with mm-hmm. I have grandkids, I'm just very glad that someone like you is in education. I mean, I was sitting here thinking about that when I was even reading your bio a few moments ago. The Bellhaven website, what I said in the beginning about the Christian worldview.
As things start to happen around the world and all these tragedies happen, it makes people think more about what's going to happen to them if something were to happen, a tragedy to them or their family or their friends. And it helps you to think about your mortality. It's an awful way to come about that, but it does make you think more. And as you grow older, particularly, you have to think about where am I going to end up, or where, when you have children or grandchildren. And so I believe that as people are trying to figure out where they belong in the marketplace ministry and also just their own self, their own spirit, their own internal destiny, the Christian college allows them to develop their Christian worldview with marketplace, real relevant marketplace skills. And, you know, with especially, and I'm speaking to Bellhaven because I know that the best, is with the different degree programs that we have, and that we've got the 5 undergraduate and 6 now undergraduate programs and 2 master's level programs, people can figure out where they can most honor the Lord in the marketplace. And that's really what we're about, is helping you to fine tune the skills that you already have, understanding your spiritual giftings, becoming relevant in the marketplace, and then allowing yourself to use your strength to place yourself to honor the Lord in the marketplace. And so that's what we do. And
we are out of time. You have been a marvelous guest. Thank you so much for coming on today. I've learned a great deal listening to you, and I've enjoyed it. And I appreciate so much you being on the program today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield. We'll see you guys again next week. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.